I kind of believe that we need both wolves. The problem we have is integrating them so they work together.
Welcome to The One You Feed. Throughout time, great thinkers have recognized the importance of the thoughts we have. Quotes like garbage in, garbage out, or you are what you think ring true. And yet, for many of us, our thoughts don't strengthen or empower us. We tend toward negativity, self-pity, jealousy, or fear. We see what we don't have instead of what we do. We think things that hold us back and dampen our spirit. But it's not just about thinking. Our actions matter. It takes conscious, consistent, and creative effort to make a life worth living. This podcast is about how other people keep themselves moving in the right direction, how they feed their good wolf. While Dave Davies of the legendary band The Kinks needs little in the way of an introduction, few people may realize that his talents and interests stretch far beyond that of a famous guitarist. In addition to surviving the Kinks, Dave also survived a debilitating stroke in 2004, only to follow up with a hugely productive decade. Most recently, he released a new record in 2013 called I Will Be Me, and just released a new book called Heal, which is a guide to meditation. And here's the interview with Dave Davies.
Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Great to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. We're really happy to have you. So our podcast is called The One You Feed, and it's based on the parable where there is a grandfather, and he's talking with his grandson, and he says, in life, there are two wolves inside of us. One is a good wolf, which represents things like kindness and bravery and love, and the other is a bad wolf, which represents things like greed and hatred and fear, and they are always at war with each other. And the grandson stops, and he thinks, and he says, well, grandfather, which one wins? And the grandfather says, the one you feed. So our show is really about how people apply that parable in their lives. So I'd like to start off by asking you what that parable means to you in your life and in your work.
I know that story well because I've been fighting with the guy all my life. I love that story. When I was about 5 years old, I was walking home from school. And you know, when you're a kid and you walk, when you look at the pavement, you have little slabs and there's lines, and you sort of like play hopscotch and you don't want to walk in the cracks, but then sometimes you might want to walk in the cracks and not walk on the clear stone, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I distinctly remember one voice on one shoulder, my left shoulder, and one voice on my right shoulder, with me in the middle, saying, gone. One would say, gone, walk on the cracks. And the other one would say, don't, walk in the spaces. And so it shows itself, that kind of parable or that metaphor looms up quite a lot when you're very young as well. It shows itself in many different forms. I kind of believe that we need both wolves. The difficulty we have is integrating them so they work together. I don't necessarily think that a dark wolf is bad. It just needs to be integrated.
Right, exactly. Hey, real quick, Dave, we're hearing some clicking. I don't know if your microphone is clicking against your shirt at all.
No,
or
it's probably me fidgeting.
Okay.
I do fidget a lot. I'm sorry, man.
No, no problem. I'm a well-known fidgeter myself. So you just recently wrote a book and released it called Heal, and it's an instruction guide to meditation that I read the other day. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the book?
Yeah, Heal is really very is a short book, a mini book. I wanted to keep it short because I wanted to get to the point quickly and hopefully devise a few exercises that can help people. We're so bombarded by all different things in our lives, like from the internet and from the workplace and driving, and everything is kind of bombarding our minds and our feelings. And half the time, I think we're not really aware of what we're really doing. We seem to be just caught in this often chaotic state of mind, just and we're bubbling up and down in this raging ocean, just hoping to get through another day. And it's really not a very good way to live.
Right.
And I think all the great mystics, I think, all the great spiritual teachers always taught about, you know, creating distance between your soul, if you like, or your real self, and what's going on outside yourself. Because it's the only way to see the wood from the trees is kind of just to step back and have a look at what really it really is going on as unemotionally as possible. Because directly we sit and try to sit calmly and we get involved with negative emotions, we're all at sea again, being tossed around in this wild ocean. Rather than just sit there and go mad or confused, or it's always good to try and do something with your mind, or you might have had an argument with your brother.
just for example, right?
or the lady next door, or someone at work, and like it can really take over your whole being.
Yeah, in your book, you describe a meditation practice, and today, mindfulness meditation is kind of all the rage. You hear a lot about it. In your book, you actually describe a three-part meditation method, where you start out with some deep breathing, then you go into some mantra or chanting work, and then finally you do some visualization at the end of that. Do I understand it pretty well, what you're trying to teach?
Yeah, basically. One of my favorite teachers was a Swami Vivekananda, and from India, and he kind of taught some great disciplines. And one of his things he said that really struck a chord with me, was that he said, "If you breathe deeply, you think deeply." And conversely, if you breathe in a shallow way, you'll think in a similar way. So breath and the way we think really affect the body physiologically. We're in this not a time machine, but this robot, if you like, that's physical and mental and imaginary and it's emotional, and I think our task or our job is to try and work with all these different elements. And I think it's interesting, being a musician and a writer, that you're kind of doing that anyway, imagination, when you think of things and what do you do with them, and you move them around like a game. And the imagination is a really powerful tool, but Vivekananda taught about breathing, how it affects the mind, and how it can help the willpower. Not only just that when you breathe deeper, you get more oxygen to the brain, it also gives you a sense of center or belief and makes you feel more self-empowered. It's almost as if we're scared or terrified just to sit down and be quiet. It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. It is hard to sit and do nothing.
And when you sit and close your eyes, you get bombarded with everything. Oh, the car, I've got to take the car to the garage. I've got to go get groceries. Oh, why didn't I? Oh, I was supposed to call. You know, it's endless. These things that mind just toys with us constantly. And I try to do some concise, simple practices that I think are beneficial. You know, and I've kept the book short, so you can read it in one session, you know, and the things you can do straight away, little breathing things, relaxation exercises. And, you know, I'd like to think people will benefit from the book.
Yeah, it's very practical. And just a second ago, you talked about how beneficial you think this stuff is. And I know you had a stroke in 2004, and some of the reading I've done, you attribute a lot of your recovery to that stroke to meditation and other spiritual practices, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And it was like this kind of weird striving that we have. Now, we want to come out at the other end, but we're all going to die anyway. It's like we're all running around trying to escape some sort of pain or suffering. But in the end, it's going to just take us away. I think that acceptance of the inevitability of life is death. It shouldn't be approached in a fearful way. So a lot of confusion in our lives, I feel, arrive from fear. When we're fearful, we can't breathe. You know, when you see someone in the panic, they go, they're not getting any breath into the lungs or into the brain. That's why breathing is so important, even simple breathing. So we can try and relax the body so that we can try and see what's going on in the mind. When we're in a state of fear, we can't do anything.
And so specifically, how were these things helping you with the stroke recovery? What parts of that did you find to be most value in helping you to recover maybe more strongly than somebody that didn't have these tools?
Well, yeah, because I'd practiced these type of techniques all my life, or since my early 20s at least, that when I was in that state that I was paralyzed and lying on my back, I didn't lose consciousness. But you have to use everything at your disposal. How can I get out of this situation? I mean, it was so debilitating, it was almost funny. It was like, I think I know things and I can do things, but actually sometimes you just cannot do anything about life. I think acceptance of that really taught me a lot about my own personality, about my own person. And I think as I went through the process of recovery, my spiritual ideas and meditation helped me through it, bit by bit, step by step. It's the easiest thing in the world to be pessimistic and to be negative. Oh, that don't work. Why should I bother with that? It never worked before and all that kind. And I think directly we go into that state of mind, it gets fed by one of the wolves and its many, many allies that are in our mind and in our consciousness. So that's why we always have to, and there's so many metaphors, isn't there? All be positive or look to the light and all these things.
The bad wolf does seem to have a lot of allies in our culture these days.
I think it's everywhere you go.
Yep. So do we try and avoid the bad wolf entirely or do we embrace him?
It's intent that drives the result. Whatever we want to do, why do we do things? What's the intent behind every action that we do, whether it's picking up a pen or just having a thought?
Right.
And like, if we can persuade the bad wolf, I don't think we should be so hard on him. I think it should be included. Like I love the old Star Trek films, and there was great lines in all of them. But there was some guy, some prophet, thought that he knew where God existed in the universe. So he hijacked the Enterprise and they to get to this place where he thought God was, this center of the universe. And he had some kind of hypnotic trick where he'd hold one of the crew and And he goes up to Kirk and he says, "Oh, Captain Kirk, let me take your pain." And Kirk turns around and says, "I need my pain." I love that. Yeah. And maybe we need the so-called dark side. It's like Star Wars. It's in a wonderful, deep, multi-layered story about metaphysical war in our own minds. You know, Star Wars is an incredible concept. There's a great scene in The Empire Strikes Back when Luke, and it's really funny, Mark Hamill is a dear friend of mine, and he's a big Kinks fan. And there's a great scene when I think Mark has to confront his dark side, and he cuts his head off, and inside the helmet, it's himself.
Right.
So the dark guy is himself as well. So what do we do with it? Is it wise to try and kill it entirely? To cut it off? I think that's a big, big mistake, if I may say so. Or if I may not say so, I'm saying it. Maybe that's a fundamental error in religion. It's trying to cut off or get rid of these elements that were maybe unsavory at first. But maybe we need to understand why that those energies and those forces that are within us respond or act or react in the way that they do. I think it's all to do with intent and nurturing and understanding. All these things have to come first.
So let's talk about music for a second. like to ask you about your solo work. If you look back on the solo work you've done over your career, I'm curious what song for you do you feel like the stars truly aligned and you got everything just the way you wanted it? The music, the lyrics, the recording, everything. Which one, you know, everything came together for you that you feel most proud of?
I think the things that catch you by surprise are always the special things. Like You Really Got Me, and it was a series of really clumsy events that led up to that record being made. And when I look back, I think, how the hell did we do that? On my latest album, there's a track called Cote d'Iran.
Yeah, we love that one.
Which seemed to just come out of itself. It got built out of itself. Meanwhile, what have we here? No Cote d'Iran, just supermarket beer. I just got busted outside my front door, making you old-fashioned eyes. Lipstick chicks with sexy smiles, turning tricks at night on the boulevard. Police surveillance gives me the creeps. Goes rain and greedy men. It's based on a character that I made up, but it's obviously part of me and it's part of people that I met. So I spent many years in LA. This guy, he lives in this little apartment, he's been through the mill, and he hasn't got any money, and he's going to lose his flat, his apartment, and what's he going to do? I think the parts in the song of this guy's character that are like me, the part where the guy talks about when he was a kid. When I was just a lad, I dreamed about a place. And that was me, and really imposing myself on this guy's life, if you like. And I, as a child, I always imagined that the future was going to be full of hope and fields and beautiful things, animals, and I still think that.
You made a joke about it earlier, and I'm sure you get tired of questions about you and your brother's relationship, and I want to put a slightly different spin on it, because what I'm curious about is how these spiritual practices help you to deal with that relationship and make it better as you get older.
Well, as I said, it's continue work, because I think the most precious thing that I've learned in my life, I probably learned from my brother. The confrontational aspects of it, the two people being two people being so vastly different from each other, it seemed like a battle, but we're each other's teachers.
Yeah,
and it seemed very hard because we had a lot of karma and there are a lot of lessons to be learned, and it's a very special kind of relationship, but I'm thankful that it's been so difficult because I needed to find out things that I might not have found out any other way.
So looking back on some of the Kinks records, I would be curious, you're obviously very well associated with You Really Got Me, and but I'd be curious, what are some of your other favorite riffs from the Kinks period, because there's so many great ones. We talk about the famous ones a lot. I'd be curious if you have a couple others that maybe aren't quite as well known that you're particularly proud of.
There's on my first solo album in 1980, there's a lot of riffs on there. Wow. And there's a song called In You I Believe, and there's a riff behind that that I love very much. And it goes down and up very quickly. I don't know. I like things that move around and go up and down quickly. I probably like my emotions. But there's that. And like Schoolboys in Disgrace has got some great riffs in there. I love riffs.
Well, you're good at them. We were listening to Waterloo Sunset not too long ago, and just the guitar part on that is perfect. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a very special record, and Ray is uncanny sometimes. His observations are so poignant and sad and distant, but still feel like there's something about his writing that's looking so hard. I love that about his writing, is that looking, observing. And which is like a meditation. I mean, we can't see unless we really penetrate the veil. We need to really look at people and the way they behave and their body language and their frowns and their laughter. And like you can tell so much from the way people laugh. And Waterloo Sunset is a very beautiful observational piece of poetry.
Yeah.
As well as sonically, it's full of light and hope. And I've count myself very lucky to be involved with some really, truly incredible pieces of music, which when you're doing them, you don't always realize what you're doing.
So you were in the process, I think, of promoting the record Bug when you had your stroke, and my partner Chris, one of his favorites is Flowers in the Rain from that record.
Oh, bless you.
All the things I didn't say, all these words keep going round and round in my brain, and I miss you most of all. When I see flowers in the rain, wish I could do something about it. Life can be cool, no doubt about it.
I was in LA at the time, and I was thinking, I really miss England. I've got to get back to England. And there is something very profoundly special about the moorlands in Dartmoor and Exmoor in Devon. It holds a special feeling for me, these moorland places, where you can go and get totally lost in nature, in the rain, and it's always raining, in the cold. And I went back to England, and I went to Devon countryside with a friend, and we sat in the middle of Dartmoor, which is a beautiful place. And I felt, and I said to the woman, I said, when I die, I want you to plant me. I want you to plant me upright in the ground here, because I've got a feeling I'll actually grow. I know it sounds like an insane person, but it's like, I felt like we're plants. It's like, you know, and then we might not be physically attached to the earth, but I think there's certain places on earth that we have more intimacy with than the others. And I find Dartmoor a very special place. And Flowers in the Rain came out of that feeling. And the I Miss You Most of All, and it's directed at people I've known that are there no more, but it's also about the place in Dartmoor. So I miss the place. And the Flowers in the Rain, which is really about a place, although it's got memories about people. So, yeah, it's a special song for me.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. So you mentioned at the beginning you're really busy. So what's coming up with you? New records, touring? What other things are going on?
Well, I've just signed an indie deal for a new album.
Excellent.
Because after the other album, it's really given me a sense of, like, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm writing songs for a new album. I won't tell you what it's about because I spoil it. I'm looking forward to start recording that. I'm doing a big show in London. I haven't played in London for 13 years. And I'm playing at a place called The Barbican on April the 11th. And I'm really, really excited about that, playing in my hometown. And not actually far from where my family grew up. So it's kind of a really special feeling. I'm also working on a paperback version of the Heal book. And I want to promote and pursue that. I'm hoping after the Barbican on the 11th, I'll come back to the States and do some selected shows. You know, because rock and roll's in my blood, as they say.
We'd love to see you playing over here in the States.
Whereabouts are you, Eric?
We are in Ohio.
Oh, cool.
Columbus, Ohio. Oh, cool. Yep. And I think if I didn't ask this, Kinks fans around the world might find us and hunt us down because it is the 50th anniversary. Any word on you guys playing together for that?
Not really, because
okay.
I don't know why we have to put... I was saying to Ray the other day, or the other week, you know, what's all this stress and pressure about a 50th year? Don't they realize that it's going to be the 51st year celebration of the Kinks next year?
And the 52nd right after that.
Yeah.
One of the things, though, that I read in an article of yours recently that I admired was you sort of talked about, you seem to have a real sense of integrity around not wanting to do something that's not good, not wanting to do it for the money. You talked about some other bands of your age who seem to just keep sort of milking the last out of the profits, and you seem to be much more focused on doing something that's meaningful and important.
It's about intent, again, going back to that word. You know, I want to do, like I'm saying to Ray, would love to for us to work together, but I want to do something that makes me happy.
Right.
You know, yeah, I'm sure we can make a lot of money if we're two old guys crawling up on stage and just blasting through. yeah, a bunch of songs. And I'm sure we can make quite a lot of money. But I don't want to go in my little quiet time and look at myself inside and think, hey, what are you doing? And I'll be playing with the wolves again.
Ray, Dave Davies and the Bad Wolves reunited. Dave, this has been a really enjoyable talk. I liked the book. We like your latest solo record, and we're looking to seeing more from you. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's great. I like what you're doing. It's a really cool idea. Well, let me know if there's anything else I can help with, and stay in touch.
Oh, we will. And hopefully we'll see you here in the States sometime over the next couple of years.
Yeah, cool. Okay,
all
man.
Right, Dave.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Take care.
See ya.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep, bye.
You can learn more about this podcast and Dave Davies at oneufeed.net/Dave Davies.